Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And today, my special guest is Frank Fotios Tsimbukaitis. Frank is the Democratic candidate running for state Senate against incumbent Republican Senator Joel Anderson in the 38th State Senate District. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here and express my views.
We should add, we're also extending an invitation to Senator Anderson as well, and we're hoping to start a series of issue-oriented talks on the show where we invite in candidates in the different races to talk about the issues that matter most to our listeners here in East County. So, Frank, if you could start by introducing yourself, tell us a little bit about your background and what made you decide to run for office.
Well, I decided to run for this particular office last year on March 21st, when the final hearing at the CPUC in Kearny Mesa was held regarding the Santee Power Plant.
The Quail Brush Power Plant.
Correct.
You're talking about the California Public Utilities Commission that held a hearing on that very controversial issue.
Correct. And I was opposing it along with most of the people in Santee, in Allied Gardens, and around Mission Trails Park.
Yeah, for those that may not be familiar with it, this is a gas-powered, fossil fuel-powered peaker power plant that was proposed right next to Mission Trails Regional Park and schools. And it was opposed by not only the Republican mayor of Santee, but by the Democratic mayor of San Diego and many other prominent elected officials. So where was Joel Anderson on that issue, Frank?
He was absent. Diane Jacob was there and she spoke against it. Duncan Hunter sent a letter in opposition.
So our supervisor, our congressman.
So did
both
Brian Jones.
All Republicans, yeah.
Jack Dale, a council member and past mayor of Santee, was there and spoke against it.
Right. And of course, then Democratic Mayor Bob Filner from San Diego as well.
And Joel Anderson was absent, so I was shocked, especially considering it was basically going to be built across from West Hills High School, which is right in the middle of his territory.
I don't recall him ever taking a stand at all, not only being absent at one hearing, but he never sent a letter in opposition?
Correct. They read the names of all the politicians, legislators, that had sent letters in opposition that couldn't be present, and his name was never announced. Researching it further, I found out that the same was the case with the East County Power Link that was built, that he never expressed an opinion for or against.
Sunrise Power Link?
Correct.
That was the one that Supervisor Jacob warned was, she called it a severe and unmitigatable fire hazard, and she was extremely outspoken about the dangers that that project posed to East County.
Correct. And then I went and I never thought of running for office. I was satisfied being the VP of the East County Democratic Club, doing my charitable work and going about my business. And then after further researching Joel Anderson, I realized he was the least communicating senator in the state and the least communicating legislator in the area.
Now, when you say that, in all fairness, I mean, he does send newsletters and stuff out to his constituents. When you say least communicating, are you talking about making public appearances, or how? What is your standard?
Holding meetings where someone does not really have to go out of their way to find them, to speak with them.
So town hall meetings, that sort of thing?
Correct. All I noticed was in the 4.5 years I've been in East County, I got his invitations for his Christmas party. Before they'd come in cards last year, they actually came in an email, which is fine. But I didn't see any open houses advertised. Brian Jones had 2 or 3 open houses where community members were invited to go. Duncan Hunter has held some meetings and he's gone to groups speaking on Labor Days or Memorial Days or July 4th. I looked online for any comments on any issues. I didn't find any. So that was it.
So apart from the Quail Brush power plant, the issue of energy issues overall, now I know that I've talked to some of the senator's constituents out in the rural areas of East County, where these massive wind farms, industrial-scale solar farms, are transforming, you know, the face of East County, truly. And a lot of them have told me they've contacted him and that he has not spoken out to take a stand against those issues either, or for that matter, for it, that he's kind of just not said much. So it begs the question, Frank, of what are your views? Obviously, you're against power plants. I know you've said that for gas-powered power plants, you don't think they should be in city limits. But for the rural listeners out there that are concerned about the industrialization of East County through the big wind and solar projects, what are your views on those?
Well, I am the person that believes a rooftop solar in every house. Mm-hmm. I have presented recommendations twice to the Board of Supervisors that are in opposition to any solar or wind farms out there.
So you have actually taken a position on record
Yes.
against these industrial scale projects.
Yes. The county has made a good faith effort to work with renewable energy. So I give them credit for that. However, they're geared towards working with aggregators, and aggregators are people that produce energy, mm-hmm. clean energy,
the
and then they sell it,
yeah.
they sell it to local constituents. So what we have is we have cleaner energy produced. However, we're not losing the dependency problem. We're going from being dependent on SDG&E to being dependent on another small investor-owned company that's producing mass energy.
Right.
What's worse with that is that that energy to be produced needs to be in farms, large solar projects that are amongst fire hazard areas, that they're windmills in mass quantities that create noises. And it's not even about the issue of risking the lives of birds and natural life. It's about actually risking the lives of humans that live in the area.
Yeah, very serious concern. Now, I've always thought it very odd that Senator Anderson did not take a stand, as you've noted, with these wind farms. You know, Duncan Hunter has written letters against them. We've seen Bob Filner, when he was in Congress, was taking stands against them. Vargas is working right now, Congressman Vargas, with some of his constituents to try to address some of their concerns about the wind farm in Ocotillo. And yet Anderson, Senator Anderson, has been very silent on this issue. So it does beg the question. We've looked at some of his financial contributions, and he does seem to have gotten many significant contributions from SDG&E. SDG&E was one of the several organizations that he got in trouble for accepting donations that had been funneled through two Republican Central Committees to his campaign. He had to give those back, and he was fined $20,000 by the FPPC for that. And
To return about $148,000.
I haven't looked recently, but how much money has he taken lately from SDG&E,
well,
if any?
We all had to file a report for fundraising for the first period of the year from January 1 to March 17th. So I looked and compared my fundraising, which was a measly $5,000, to Joe Anderson's $25,750, of which $25,750 were from organizations and companies and none
so
from an individual.
100% of it is from corporations.
Correct.
And zero is from individuals.
There was a non-monetary donation of around $47 that I don't know where it came from. My donations were from myself and from four constituents. That's more than Joe Anderson received.
Yeah, so he's basically not been willing to take a stand against these energy projects, and he's getting money from SDG&E. So we'll leave constituents, I guess, or listeners to draw a judgment about whether there's a connection there, and we certainly will be asking him about that if he comes on the show, in all fairness. Perhaps he has other reasons for not taking a stand on these things. Now, to switch gears for just a moment, Frank, one of the most interesting issues that you raised in this campaign that I had not heard before, but as a parent of two recent college graduates, I know myself and my intern here from SDSU has been very fascinated about your proposal for how to make college more affordable. Can you tell us about your plan?
Yes, I think and I aim to eliminate tuition for California undergraduate residence students.
We're talking about
in the UC system, the CSU system, and the community college system. This will involve saving money to about 2.5 million students, which would correspond to maybe 2.5 million families at least.
Now, I'm sure the students, and speaking as a parent, I'm sure would be delighted if it was possible to have this happen, because obviously there's a lot of people who can't afford to go to college, or it's, you know, just breaking the parents to put them through. But that said, some people may think that's unrealistic. Where does the money come from? The state has been cash-strapped.
Well,
how do you get the money to support the fine quality educational institutions we have in California if you eliminate tuition for California resident students?
Well, I looked, I started by looking at what the budget used to be and what it is. In 1981, when I first attended UC Berkeley, the UC system was getting 5.06% of the state budget's money, and this is only one system. Today, they get 2.86%. That 2.2% difference at a $150 billion budget corresponds to over $3 billion. The gap, which is the tuition that's actually paid by undergraduate students before any financial aid is calculated, is about $3.8 billion. And we're talking state residents, undergraduates that attend those institutions is less than $5 billion, less than $3 billion for the CSU and the UC system. Now, the CSU system is running like what I would say a well-oiled machine, very efficient for the number of campuses, 23, the number of employees, about 44,000. The UC system is a little overburdened with administrative personnel exceeding 132,000 as of 2012. For 10 campuses, that's 13,200 per campus. Some of them have more. UCLA is over 30,000. Santa Barbara is much more efficient. It's
so you're saying the answer basically in a nutshell is to cut the administrative? They're top heavy on administrative?
There is a few measures that have to be taken. First, my elimination of tuition will occur over 10 years. It will be a 10% a year deduction until it zeros out in 10 years. Mm-hmm. It will also apply to California longer-term residents. For example, you've been here 4 years, you're attending college, you get 4 years free tuition, 5 years free tuition. If you've been here 1 year, you come from another state, you graduate high school, after 1 year, normally you would be considered a resident. Now you can get 1 year free tuition. Mm-hmm. We need to reward long-term paying California taxpayers, citizens, the parents that put these roads together, that built these buildings to be rewarded first.
There you go.
It will also apply to 5 years of studying in combination, junior college or four-year college. We don't want to keep this going on forever. This will help expedite people through the system since they won't have to work as much to support themselves.
Yeah, my daughter was working 3 jobs at one point to get through UC and having to take the minimum units and work 3 jobs.
They won't have to borrow money. In addition, a big benefit to the state will be the money that the parents save from not having to pay the tuition will be pumped right back into the economy. Not everything will be saved. So there will be a tax benefit in tax sales revenue.
So if anything, this would be a net revenue benefit for the state, you believe.
Correct.
You
grow
drain.
Business. It's not. It's like a tax break for people, just like a lot of my other plans. They translate into being a tax benefit that benefits everyone.
I mean, you've obviously done a lot of research on this, and I understand, Frank, that your background actually is in finance. Can you tell people just a little bit about yourself and your avocation, your professional background?
So yeah, it's
your qualifications for this job.
I spend most of my career in sales and marketing, and 21 of those years was actually in the alcohol beer business. I have an MBA from National University.
Would you be willing to vote against measures that the alcohol industry was sponsoring today?
Yes, I think we can't look at who donates to us. We have to look at what the merits of a bill are, and we have to be realistic. We cannot be wishy-washy on certain issues. I prioritize my life. As I tell people, I said there's the two most important segments of our society are the under 18s and the over 65s. The over 65s because they're the ones who built this country, and the under 18s because they're the future of this country.
Okay. Back to your background a little bit. So you did a lot of sales and marketing.
Yes.
And then?
I worked as a investment banker, stockbroker, 86, 87, 88. Mm-hmm. I got out of the business. I got into beer sales and marketing, which my life led to it. I ran the campus bar in UC Berkeley when I was there. So it was a natural progression. And I worked for almost 21 years until my company was bought out, Anheuser-Busch, and I was laid off, and that was okay. Mm-hmm. I understood it. Fortunately, over time, I had built a nice nest egg with investments, being an experienced investor. Mm-hmm. I had built a nice nest egg of real estate investments, so I had planned for it, and I was okay, and I was just going about working my business, raising my kids, you know, nurturing them as they're going through college, and living life with my wife until I decided to be politically active. I paid attention and I said, you know what? We can do it better. We deserve the best. We deserve better than what we're getting, but we deserve the best in East County. Because like Gavin Newsom said at a meeting last week, I think in California we've forgotten, and we think that California is the first 15 miles from the coast. and there is an inland that needs to be tended to, and he was 100% right.
So you want to be the champion for those inland voters?
I want to be the champion for everybody, because eliminating tuition in the state will save money to 2.5 million families. Maybe 50, 60,000 of those families are in my district. Doing some of the other proposals that I have will favor 300,000 residents in my area, 20,000. So in the end, 100% of the people will benefit. If we don't build any power plants in any rural areas where people live, guess what? Everybody benefits. We have cleaner air.
I want to ask you, circle back to another question on the energy issue. One thing that I was pretty surprised to find out is that although California has this very ambitious and I think commendable goal of saying let's get 30% of our power from renewable sources by 2030, I was rather shocked to find out that rooftop solar doesn't count toward that, and that when the regulators are considering, say, a project like the industrial Soitec solar project or these big wind projects out here, they are not allowed to say, well, let's look at an alternative of what would it cost if we took the same money and spent it on rooftop solar, how much could we produce? Solar experts have told me you could actually provide more power for less money if you just paid everybody to put solar on the roofs. They're only allowed by law to consider other industrial scale projects. Well, if we don't build this giant wind farm, we'll build another wind farm, you know, down the road, another site. Do you think that legislation is needed in Sacramento to correct that, what many would say is an inequity there, and to instead encourage or require that the first choice should be the least environmentally destructive and the ones that will produce the most power for the least total cost, both dollar cost and environmental cost, and maybe require that things like rooftop solar be evaluated as an alternative to industrial scale projects?
Realistically, the most effective way to use renewable energy is one house, one solar. Mm-hmm. Every house to have their own independence in energy production. Usually this will translate to 25 years, and because of the savings, the time will come where everything will be renewed. It would go on automatic pilot once we do this. I think one of the reasons that individual solar systems in homes is not recognized, because companies that have the solar farms tend to be a little better givers than individual homeowners may be.
So it's back to the money.
They're the ones who will pay for golf tournaments, for trips to seminars, for expensive dinners. And that's why I've said I will not take a dollar in gifts from anyone. I don't need them. I never took them when I was in sales, and I don't do them now because I don't return the favor. I try to be objective. And if you receive benefits, it's very hard to be objective.
Do you think that a bill is needed to require that alternatives to industrial scale be considered on a project-by-project basis? That, in other words, the regulators would be required to weigh rooftop solar or other small-scale distributed locally produced projects over remote industrial scale wind or solar projects?
Yes, I would even carry a bill to do that, because what happens is a house with solar panels has just gone off the grid, right? Mm-hmm. So they're producing solar energy. The old days, it may have been the thought that it's easier to track big projects because they're concentrated. You know what? The way the system works today with these computers and the technology we have is very simple. We know exactly what went where. The companies that installed them, they know how much power went to each house. So technology makes things so much easier for us. I don't know why we don't use it for a lot of other things too.
Well, we are very appreciative of you taking the time to come on our show today, Frank. And we definitely hope to have you back along with Senator Anderson so that we can have some real in-depth conversations on the issues that matter most. And listeners, if there's an issue out there that you want us to ask the candidates about, please send us your questions to editor@eastcountymagazine.org, and we will do our best to get some answers.
Thank you for the opportunity to express my positions, and hopefully I have a lot of positions. I have an opinion on a lot of subjects, and I think it's a matter of taking action or not taking action, and I'm a guy of taking action. And everybody who's dealt with me in the past, they know that I don't like to mince my words. I care about the whole. I don't care the me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
You're welcome.